I'm up at J&R Cigars. All right.
And yeah. You know, I know which one you've been going to, too. The one up on Fifth Avenue. Right?
Yeah, I'm not proud of this. I don't want people thinking that I'm some sort of cigar snob or that I'm enjoying this. I'm an addict, a drug addict. Okay. And the thing is that.
He loves that smell of tobacco, folks.
In lieu of drugs, you know what I mean? I got to this point where it's like, you know, I deserve to reward myself with something. You know what I mean? Like, on a day-to-day basis, I'm sitting
We're
alone.
We're all like that, man. That's human nature.
Yeah, I'm sitting at home, you know, with my cats and no wife. And I'm like, I want a party. So I started smoking the damn little punches. So I go up to J&R, and I'm fighting it, too, because I don't want to do it. But, you know, you fight it like you're sitting like, yeah, I'm not going to smoke a cigar today. And all of a sudden, I find myself walking up Fifth Avenue. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
I know exactly what you mean. I've walked the same walk.
So I'm walking in there, and some old guy's talking to me. He's the guy who's going to sell me some stuff. And I'm like, cool. And, you know, we go over to do the cigars. And I'm looking at him like he's familiar, you know. And he starts talking about how, like, well, when I had a magazine. And I'm like, oh, my God, you're Al Goldstein.
What?
It's Al Goldstein.
Al Goldstein?
Al Goldstein selling me cigars. Screw magazines, Al Goldstein.
Screw... Really?
You know what Screw
I know about Screw Magazine. Look.
But he's lost like 150 pounds. The guy's you know, he's a rail. He's like, he's very humbled. You know, apparently he went bankrupt. He was homeless. He was living in shelters. And now he's selling cigars over J&R to me, Mark Maron.
Wow, that's incredible.
Yeah,
that is absolutely incredible.
It's wild, right?
Well, you know,
New York's weird like that.
New York is weird. And the thing about Al Goldstein is that 10 years before Cigar Aficionado came out, Al Goldstein tried to put out a cigar magazine.
Yeah.
That was not successful. But, you know, the whole idea of being a connoisseur, that was his idea.
But even more interesting than that, Al Goldstein was sort of one of the, he was a true sort of filthmeister.
Oh, yeah.
And he was like one of the great mythic presences of New York filth. Apparently one of the most annoying, but, you know, fairly compelling guys around.
Oh, yeah. He used to have a TV show. Midnight Blue on Public Access TV.
They'd sit around naked, right?
Yeah, they'd sit around naked, or he'd show these like softcore scenes of movies, or whether they'd have a movie review section, and he'd have a rant.
Uh-huh.
Every show, he'd have a rant. It was the, how best to put this, FU segment.
Yeah.
And he'd do this like every, you know, I think it was on 2-3 nights a week or whatever. And he had this like little cult following. I'll never forget, I was working for a radio network one night, and I was working late, right? And all of a sudden, the guy that was on the air runs into the back rooms. You got to come out and see this. You got to come out and see this. So we all charge into this little room where they actually had cable TV. This is in the mid-70s, And it was Midnight Blue. And it was this interracial couple.
Having sex?
Yeah. Oh, it's Al Goldstein again. Huh? So, yeah, and, you know, he had a place on the east side of Manhattan. I mean, he had, like, a townhouse, a really, really expensive place. Because, you know, the porn business had been good to him for a long time.
Right. And this is a time where a lot of these porn guys were filth salesmen, were real sort of champions of the First Amendment because they had to be in order to stay in business. So there's sort of an interesting kind of patriotic twist to all that, you know, with Larry Flint and with people like Goldstein.
With people like Goldstein. And Goldstein, you know, also was famous in New York for inadvertently, as it turned out, exposing the whole organized crime element of magazine and newspaper distribution in New York.
Uh-huh.
Because somebody asked him once, well, you know, how do you get your So I paid him up. What else do you think? I get my magazine out. And it led to a whole thing. And I mean, it was like a really ugly scene for me.
I talked to my butter Jack Bulwer in San Francisco, did an interview with him for his book, Love American Style. And, he said that, you know, Goldstein was, you know, what was I just going to say? It just left me completely. That Goldstein was one of the first guys to put advertising for escort services, you know, in his paper, you know, which was a big breakthrough for that kind of thing.
And now the Village Voice here in New York makes all the money from the same services.
And more importantly, he gave a lot of underground cartoonists opportunities that had never been, hadn't worked before, like Art Crumb, S. Clay Wilson. He used to do a lot of that kind of stuff. And Josh Allen Friedman, who wrote the Tales of Times Square, used to write for Screw. And Tales of Times Square, arguably one of the great books about New York City, as far as I can tell. You know, it's about the 70s, it's about, you know, the late 70s, and about this sort of transition of, you know, the way he writes a lot about stuff, but there's one thing in there about Goldstein and this other guy going to Plato's Retreat and trying to break a record.
By the way, you know who also used to work for Al Goldstein?
Who?
Somebody you know very well.
Who?
Alex Bennett.
Yes, I know.
Yeah.
Alex Bennett, who now has a show on Sirius.
Oh, really?
Yep. I used to do Bennett's show out west.
He always used to
talk about Goldstein. But I think Goldstein's a little bitter about Larry Flint. He's a little bit bitter about, you know, his treatment of him.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know what that story was, but he was like, you know.
Oh, he was bitter about a lot of stuff. You know, he married this woman that used to be like his cleaning lady or something. And then they got divorced, and she took him for a whole bunch of money.
Well, speaking of porn, there's just a quick story here, you know, that there's apparently they're going to do a congressional study of porn addiction.
Did they call you? Did they call me?
I am not a porn addict in terms of, you know, I understand it. You know,
me too.
And I, you know, I'm one of these people, I don't celebrate pornography, but I get it. And, you know, it's come in handy.
What do you mean by get it?
I get it. I'll go and I'll look for it.
Oh, okay. All right.
You know, but, you know, I'm not proud of it. You know what I mean? There's no celebrating. You know what I mean? But
I thought watching porn was in its own way a celebration.
It's not. It's a sad pastime of lonely people or just people
with big forearms. Yes.
Oh man.
I'm sorry. I couldn't help it.
Just took the train to Riley Town. I was trying to avoid it, but we were in it. There's no way around it. But the interesting thing about the congressional investigation is that I guess a lot of these congressmen are going to have to keep diaries when they go on the road.
Oh, yeah.
So they're going to actually study porn addiction within the Congress, and then
with a portable DVD player, right?
Well, I just, you know, obviously, everyone should be allowed to indulge, and I think it's all fine. But, you know, let's not mistake it. With the internet, anything can become addicting.
Oh,
because
yeah.
of the privacy available on one level, just that you can do anything in your own house. But also just the fact that, I can get addicted to email, Riley. I'm addicted to email. I'm addicted to the email that comes into this station because of it. And none of this stuff would happen because of the internet. I mean, if you were a porn addict, you know, 10 years ago, you'd have to have a stack of tapes. You know, you'd have to sit there. You'd have to have an entire library of stuff. And you'd have to really kind of like, you know, sit there with your VCR. Now you can just pop around in that computer. And it's very, it almost feeds addiction.
It feeds itself. And by the way, a lot of the most prominent internet companies and providers make a fortune off of pornography. A fortune.
Well, that's the whole thing. Because I wonder, like, you know, there's a whole, it's not even a subculture anymore. This sort of stripper / pornographic, you know, subculture is not a subculture. It is, you know, completely mainstream. It is completely, it's making people billions of dollars.
Yes.
And it's interesting why the religious right doesn't go after them as much as they used to because they can't. It's too powerful. It's too big. It's amazing. They can only pick little teeny things.
It's like trying to put toothpaste back in the tube. I mean, with the internet and its ability to spread this stuff all over the globe, there's no way to stop it anymore. There's really no way to restrict it.